With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Getting engaged is a moment worth cherishing. A one-of-a-kind ring that you design at Blue Nile can help your love sparkle. Just choose your diamond and setting. When you found the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Finding the right engagement ring can be nerve-wracking. At Blue Nile, you'll have the expert guidance needed and a diamond guarantee that ensures you're getting the highest quality at the best price. Cherish all of life's moments and save up to 30% at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening. Welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. As we sit here, this is the end of the first Super Wild Card weekend. Sadly, the Raiders aren't in. I'm your host, Terrence Figgs, with me. As always, on Sunday/Monday. He breaks down tape like a few others. Our guy, Ryan Holmes. Good evening, Ryan. How are you?
Good evening. I'm doing good. No heart attacks this weekend with the Raiders not being involved in the playoffs.
No, it's strange to watch other teams in the playoffs knowing that there's only been one time in the last, 18 years that we've watched the Raiders play in the playoffs. It's that way, but we'll get to that. But I want to break this down in pieces. First thing I want to talk about when we talk about the 2020 season is the draft. We'll start with Henry Ruggs. Coming out of Alabama, did you think that Ruggs would be a Gruden pick?
You heard potentially just because of the speed. I thought they were going to run a lot more underneath stuff, a lot more slant, you know, underneath routes. I thought they were going to go with CeeDee Lamb is who I thought they were going to take at that point. You could see why with what Tyreek Hill's done in Kansas City and Gruden kind of wanting a guy like that in his offense, but at the same time, he didn't integrate him that way. They basically used him as a decoy for most of the season, just not getting targets to him, not getting creative. I was excited first half against Carolina. They came out. He had 4 or 5 touches right away, some creative stuff with him, some over routes, some quick return routes, a whip route, getting the ball in his hands, and then it all stopped. And it didn't happen again the rest of the season, so... we'll see moving forward. It could be some trust issues with the quarterback. You know, receivers have the trust to Carr for him to go to them. And I just don't know if there was something in practice or something behind the scenes that was going on where he just wasn't developing that. And then obviously when you have a Darren Waller on your team, he deserves 130, 140 targets that he got. And then Aguilar stepped up and knew what you were getting from Renfro. But they have to figure out next year how to get the ball in his hands. He should get 6 to 8 targets a game. He should touch the ball repeatedly and use his speed. So some of this is going to be on Ruggs to continue to develop and get better, and some of it's on the quarterback and some of it's on the play caller.
It's weird because when Ruggs was at Alabama, a lot of the routes he feasted on were those quick slants where he would use his speed to get even and then leave with the ability to accelerate in the open field. Carr didn't even
get any chances. He did not do that with the Raiders.
No, he didn't even get any chances. And then at times he threw not so much jump ball routes, but routes that required Ruggs and the cornerback to contest for. Ruggs is, what, 5'10", 5'11". He threw big receiver routes to a shorter receiver, and I thought that was interesting. Even though Ruggs is super athletic, I didn't think that that was the best use of his skills. Now, we need to talk about Darren Arnett. When you saw him being picked in the first, did you think he was a reach, or did you think that there was a plan in place?
No, I thought it was a reach. He was squarely by most teams in the second round. He was an older prospect. I believe he's 24 years old already. The stuff that Gruden talked about him coming out of college and the reason why they saw him as a first rounder was his toughness. He called him at one point the best tackling cornerback in the draft. PFF had him rated really highly. But he was also guarding the second-best receivers on the other teams in the Big Ten because he had Jeff Okuda across from him. And those traits that he talked about, the toughness, yeah, he played injured. He was injured most of the season. His tackling was very spotty. It actually was not very good at all. So if that was one of the traits that they saw in him, hopefully that has to do with the broken wrist that he played with because his technique was bad. He got injured a couple of times. He was diving at feet. You never really saw him wrap anybody up. And that's going to be something that Damon Arnett's going to have to get better at. And he's going to have to develop quickly. This guy's going to be 24, 25 next year. And by the time his rookie contract's over, he's going to be close to 29. So they need to get a lot out of him over the next 3 or 4 years to justify that first-round pick. You know, looking back on it, it'd be pretty sweet if they had CeeDee Lamb or even Justin Jefferson with the kind of season he put up. But Ruggs was a development they drafted basically due to his speed. But at some point, you can't take a guy 12th in the draft as a decoy.
They had a guy, you mentioned a guy like CeeDee Lamb, where the Cowboys went through 4 quarterbacks. Dak Prescott gets hurt. They had a host of other passes in there. They had Andy Dalton. They had a bunch of guys. And they, because of the being in the benefit of being the weakest in the weakest division in football, they still had an outside chance to make the playoffs. Lamb still showed up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, to be fair, Lamb did run almost all of his routes out of the slot this year. And the Raiders had Renfrow in the slot. So they needed a guy that could win outside. Lamb hasn't shown that yet. I'm not saying that he can't do it. He probably can. But the Raiders clearly targeted an outside speed receiver, and that's probably why they went with Ruggs over Lamb, who's been in the slot. Jefferson was mostly a slot receiver at LSU, although he did play outside this year with the Vikings very successfully. But that could have been another reason why.
As we move forward in the draft, we got to talk about Lynn Bowden. Lynn Bowden was never suited up, was sent to Miami. Is this the most embarrassing pick of the Mayock Gruden regime, the fact that they picked a guy in, you know, what amounts to, a top 100 pick, and he never played a down?
Yeah, I want to say he was picked at, I want to say he went 80th and Edwards was 81, but to take him and move him out, something had to have happened behind the scenes that no one knows about. To just give up on a guy that has talent, who they drafted knowing they'd have to convert to a running back, when there was no off season in this COVID 2020 season, to just jettison him out of there after 3 weeks of practice of training camp and then basically acquire a run-stuffing middle linebacker who's a free agent who the Raiders probably will not resign. I don't know. That one was tough. I could make the argument it might actually be Tanner Muse, the other third rounder, because we haven't seen him yet. But I was not a Tanner Muse guy at Clemson. He's very stiff. I know he ran a really good 40, and he's a straight line guy. But I just don't see his body type and his movement skills being able to play linebacker and hold up as a starter. They basically took a special teams guy in the third round. If we want to debate the careers of those two, I would venture to say that Bowden's going to have a much better career at the end of the day than Tanner Muse will have.
And we talk about Bryan Edwards, and this is a guy who he was hurt for a couple of weeks, but then he just wasn't targeted. Like, he just never saw the field. And I don't understand, if you're going to draft a guy with a day two pick, how in the world does he only receive 15 targets the whole season?
This is squarely on Gruden, because he won the job out of training camp. He was the starter over Aguilar. over Renfro and over Zay Jones. And he starts and he plays for 3 weeks. He gets hurt at New England in week three, misses. It wasn't a bunch of time. He may have missed 3 weeks. So he's back in week seven, and then he's just an afterthought. Like, they can't even get him on the field for more than a couple of snaps a game. They're struggling in the red zone the second half of the season. They can't design a play to get the ball in his hands. You can't even get him in the game and just run a slant or a fade or something to use his body type and his athleticism and just the ability to run after the catch that the Raiders just didn't have with really some of the other options. And then Zay Jones is getting twice as many snaps as him the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. I don't know. That one's a head-scratcher. That one, we're never going to know the answer to that, but that was a big indictment on the season and Gruden's preference to play veterans. There is no reason Zay Jones should be taking snaps away from a healthy Bryan Edwards.
Now, we mentioned the straight line-ish of Tanner Muse, and the thought was to convert him to outside linebacker. It just seems like it was a reach pick. I want to talk about John Simpson. I saw with Simpson there is a decent ceiling for where he was selected and what he brings to the team. Do you think that you've seen enough where he can supplant one of the starters at guard going into 2021?
I do. I thought he played well the last 2 weeks of the season. I thought, surprisingly, his pass blocking was better than his run blocking. But he's a big physical dude that was a good run blocker in college. And once he just gets the reps and understands Hudson and Miller, if he plays the left side or whoever the right tackle will be next year, hopefully Trent Brown, and just gets the reps and get in there, he can be at least an average competent starter in the league. And he might have a ceiling a little bit better than that. And you're paying him as a fourth round pick. So he's making, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's probably $500,000, $600,000. It's a very low number compared to paying similar players on the free agent market that don't have the upside, that aren't as young, and going out and paying a guy $6-8 million to come in. I'd much rather roll with Simpson and move on. When you invest in an offensive line, the Raiders had the most money invested in the offensive line of any team in the league this year, and Pro Football Focus ranked them 24th overall. Now, I don't agree with their rankings at all the time, but clearly the return on investment's not there. And if you're going to pay some offensive linemen, I'm okay paying the tackles in the center and just getting by with, you know, marginal or fringe players at the guards, because it's really not going to affect you as much when you have the tackles foundation set and the center, which is what I'm perfectly fine moving forward with Miller if Brown takes a small pay cut and Hudson, and then filling in at both guard spots. And even if they move away from Gabe Jackson, who's playing right now as an average player, like, it's not a bad thing, but you're paying him to produce at an elite Pro Bowl level, and he's just not that guy. So you're overpaying for production where you can get similar production for $9 million less. The Raiders should go that route.
Now, lastly, Amik Robinson was a guy out of Louisiana Tech, ball hawk. Despite his size, he was a feisty tackler, good in coverage. Since week 9, he had played 10 defensive snaps and 12 special team snaps. Do you think that was more of a numbers game with him, or do you think he didn't show enough, or do you think that was yet another failure in coaching?
I'm going to lean on coaching on this one. I like to make Robertson as a prospect. He was a very physical guy, albeit he had a smaller stature. But he showed ball skills in college. He could run. He was physical in run support. He'd come down and tackle. So it could have just been a speed of the game thing coming from Louisiana Tech to the NFL, understanding a more complex scheme, learning a new position, playing the inside slot corner versus an outside corner in college. So he's a young guy. I was surprised they didn't use him on special teams more, given, you know, his tackling ability that he showed on tape in college. But they just didn't trust him to understand the scheme and what to do. And the few snaps he did get on defense, he did seem lost. So he's a guy that we could be seeing a totally different player next year in training camp if he gets a full off season with the new defensive coaching staff, whoever that's going to be, and understanding a new scheme. But he's going to have to earn his snaps next year, because I fully expect the Raiders to continue to add to the defensive secondary. They need a veteran corner. They can't go into next year and count on Arnett and Mullen as the starters. And then they're still going to need a slot corner, because I don't see Joyner on this team next year. And if he is, the new defensive coordinator should put him at free safety.
Before we go to break, I want to kind of jump in with Trayvon Mullen. How much of a regression or step back did he take this year?
I thought it took a small step back. He played really well the second half of last year once he was put in the starting lineup. And this year I thought it was more a technique issue with his footwork, because when his feet aren't right, he tends to grab. And he did a little bit of that last year too, but it's something that he's going to have to clean up. And hopefully, and I think I mentioned this on a tweet not too long ago, late this evening, that if there's two position coaches that you're going to pay at the NFL level, the two most important guys are, one, the defensive backs coach, and two, the offensive line coach, because those are the guys that are going to impact games. You have to develop talent at both of those positions. So whoever the Raiders bring in, goal number one is the defensive back coach is going to have talent, but they're going to have to mold it and get guys to understand the proper techniques to use, and then situational awareness. And those are the two things that the Raiders defensive backs have lacked for years.
When we come back from break, I want to just go over a few of the free agents and see where they will end up and how they fared in 2020. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, when we look at free agents, even though he had an abysmal year, I want to talk about Malik Collins. I know it's a one-year deal, but should his poor performance reflect poorly upon Rod Marinelli, since Marinelli is the one who probably vouched for him?
I would say yes. I mean, Marinelli was the one that brought him in. It was his influence. The Raiders signed him, and you heard Gruden come out and say he's the key to the defense in training camp. And he came out, and, well, let's be honest, he was bad the entire season. He didn't flash at all. The last week of the year against Denver, there was one or two plays where he got a little bit of pass rush, but for the most part, he was a non-factor the entire season. And the Raiders really needed interior rush this year, and they got none of it again. So that has to fall on Rod Marinelli at some point. He's coaching him up. It's his guy. He has familiarity with him. They brought him in. Now, we don't know what injuries he had throughout the year. Gruden ended up putting him on IR at one point down the stretch and mentioned several injuries, but he has to perform. The Raiders need active interior rushers, and I don't think Malik Collins should be anywhere near that roster next year.
Now, Jeff Heath was another guy where it seemed as though, if not for two pretty much telegraphed Drew Lock passes, we'd be having a similar discussion to Malik Collins. Is this more of a Rich Bisaccia vouch that went sideways again, like Keith Smith? And it just seems as though these ex-Cowboys might need to stay far from Vegas.
I think he has the potential to be a cap casualty. I think his number is $3.5 million this year, and there's no dead money if they release him. He was probably the most consistent Raider safety this year, but the bar is so low, it could have been anyone that was breathing on the roster that wasn't named Abram or Harris. I think he did have moments. He was solid. He wasn't spectacular. You didn't really see him do anything on special teams. It was interesting because they brought him in as kind of, he's going to be a special teams guy, third, fourth safety. And then I don't even remember him playing much special teams or making any tackles or impact plays the entire season. If they could bring him back on a shorter deal money-wise, so instead of 3.5, maybe 1.5, then yeah, he's veteran depth. I don't have a problem with him being the third or fourth safety, especially if, you know, as reports are showing that Chris Richard is either the defensive coordinator or, let's say, a defensive back coach position with the Raiders. He coached Jeff Heath, obviously, in Dallas, so there's a connection there. So, you know, if he comes back again, he should not be penciled in as a starter. He's more of a depth piece for the Raiders.
Now, we switch to somebody who it appeared when he was signed that the Raiders overpaid, which is Carl Nassib. Carl Nassib signed that 3-year, $25 million deal. Now, they're still on the hook for their dead cap if they whatever it's 5.75 million last year. I don't know what they saw that he was worth this money when he wasn't going to start. He started what, 5 games, and he had that 2-week vacation when he was deactivated. That's a lot of money for 2.5 sacks, basically. And yes, he did knock down 5 passes, but he's also like 6'6". Do you think there's a restructuring coming?
I don't see a restructuring, because if they restructure, then they're obviously accelerating money and they're going to have to extend the contract out. I don't think he's taking a pay cut. I think he's back on the roster. I'd say it's 90-10 that he's back on the roster. There is a chance they could move on from him. If whoever the new defensive coordinator is and he doesn't like Carl Nassib, it's not the end of the world if you have to eat a couple of million dollars to move on this year. If there's a better player who's a better fit for the new scheme. Nassib was released in Cleveland, went to Tampa, was kind of a backup there, but he's rushing on a team that has elite pass rushers all around him. And he got a couple of sacks, and the Raiders must have went crazy. I didn't understand that when they made that deal. I thought it would be a 1-year deal, and then when they announced it, it's a 3-year deal with $17 million guaranteed. That was a huge reach and an overpay, and a guy who really didn't even fit Gunther's scheme either. So that was interesting that they went in. I think the Raiders' pro personnel department needs an upgrade, because all of the free agents they're bringing in aren't really doing much. So that's another thing. That's another issue.
Probably their best free agent signing list past year was Nelson Agholor, where he was known for having awful drops in Philly. He had drops in Vegas, but he also added 8 touchdowns on 48 receptions and something like 19 yards a catch. There's been talk via the fan base that they want him to resign. Now, we both agree that a lot of his targets should go to Ruggs. Do you see him taking a big deal elsewhere, or do you think that he will give the Raiders a hometown, not hometown discount, but a discount because they took a flyer on him?
I don't think he's giving them a discount. He played for league minimum this year, so he's going to test the market. So obviously what the Raiders are offering at this point, he thinks, or his agent thinks, he can get better on the open market. This is going to be a really interesting one to watch, just because there's a slew or a plethora of free agent wide receivers on the market that are actually better than Nelson Agholor. I'd say there's 7 or 8 that are better than him. So he's going to slot in somewhere around the 8th or 9th best free agent wide receiver. Now we're talking about a year where the cap's going down. Teams are that are over the cap are going to have to figure out how to get those cap numbers down. And in a normal year with a regular cap, does Agholor go out and get $10 or $11 million? Yeah, I would say potentially that's the number. But this year, because of everything that's going on around the league, I would set a number. I'd love to have him back for the right price, but that price for me is somewhere in the $6 to $6.5 million, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal at, you know, let's say 3 years, $18 million. I'm okay with that. I don't want to approach the $9 or $10 million a year, because at some point, and I have these same conversations that you do on the Raiders Twitter with the fans, and all we hear is there's no defense. I had another conversation yesterday with another fan, and he wants Trent Brown and Gabe Jackson. He wants all these guys back, and then at the same time wants a defense. And you know, we can't lose Agholor, because then he was the receiver who we're going to throw to. And it's like, well, you drafted Ruggs. Your scouting department believed in him. John Gruden believed in him. Mark Davis believed in him. You need to give him a chance. These guys have to produce when they're not making a lot of money. You can't just go out and keep signing all these guys and using all these resources on offense. The Raiders had the second most amount of money in the league spent on offense to produce the, I don't know, was it 11th most points? I think they were 11th in points per game. The return on investment there is not good. So, I mean, at some point, if you look at Aguilar's numbers, I don't have them in front of me. I want to say it was like 48 catches, 900 yards, 8 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. The 8 touchdowns are great. The yards per catch are great. He still had 5 drops. 48 catches isn't that hard to replicate. That's 3 catches a week. It's not like this guy went out and got 110 balls for 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns. That's a whole other conversation. And any other year, if you just give me that stat line and ask me what that's worth on the free agent market, if you take the name off the jersey, you take the jersey off and it's just a random player who you just throw in the player pool, that player is not worth $10 million a year.
Seth Rollins.
So I think a lot of fans are getting in their emotions on this one rather than being smart and sensical and looking at where you need to spend money to have success. And if the Raiders, and I tweeted this out this afternoon, and to be an average at the professional athlete level in anything, in any sport, is really, really hard to be an average NFL player. There are way more players in the NFL that are below average replacement level, marginal, than there are that are above average or elite. So to just say, oh, we just need an average defense, we have an average defense, that means you need to be better than 15 other defenses in the league. They're spending a lot more money on defense than you are, that have more talent than you do. So in order to be the 15th best defense, you need talent. To get talent, you need the resources. You can't just wave a magic wand, as I've mentioned on this podcast, and just say, we're going to hire a new coordinator, we're going to have the 15th best defense, and all is good in the world. That's not how this works. Watch these playoff games. Every one of these teams has two elite players on these defenses. The Raiders have zero, let alone complementary players that can fill in around those guys. So they're going to have to spend money, and the only way they can do that is to take the money away from the offense. So I don't understand the fans that want to have these arguments that we need to re-sign all these guys and keep all these players on offense, but in the same token, think that the Raiders are going to be able to go out and add to the defense. It's not possible to do that.
It's said that Corey Littleton benefited most from Paul Gunther's firing because it seemed like he played much better when Gunther was gone. In year two of his contract, do you see the upward trend continuing?
I do. I've been a fan of Corey Littleton. I know he had a rough start with the Raiders for the first 12 or 13 weeks or however long Gunther was there, but this guy's played at a Pro Bowl level. He's fast. He's instinctive. He can cover. The Raiders used him a lot in man coverage on the backside of formations, and he wasn't really targeted a lot the last 6 weeks of the season. So when you don't see him showing up and making plays, that can be a good thing as well. It means he's covering his guy. He's not giving up explosive plays. I think he was lost earlier in the season, moving from a 3-4 inside backer to an outside backer in a 4-3, learning Gunther's scheme that has so many plays and sophisticated, as we've heard. I think if you just get him in a system that's simpler and you give him the role and just let him go and be an athlete, he can do that. Now, he's not a guy just based on his stature. He's built like a safety. So the Raider fans, I thought he was coming in and was going to be Ray Lewis and be this ultimate run stuffer and take on guards and shed and blow up guys in the hole. That is not who Corey Littleton is. He's a sideline-to-sideline guy that needs to be protected. You need to have linemen or defensive linemen keep the offensive linemen off of him and just let him work sideline to sideline. The biggest thing with him, I think, that surprised me was the amount of tackles he missed. He's been a very efficient tackler in his career, and he missed a ton of tackles this year. At some point, I think it was over 10, which is a lot. So he just needs to clean up his tackling, and hopefully the Raiders can get some defensive linemen in front of him that can keep the offensive linemen off him and just let him be an athlete, and then you'll see what they thought they were going to get when they signed him.
Littleton, I agree. He actually, believe it or not, he missed 17 tackles.
Yeah, I knew it was a big number.
That's like Miles Burr's bad.
And he's now starring in Disney movies, by the way.
Yes. Actor, Miles Burr's. Actually, so is Anami Osama. He's actually like a leading man now, which is just, hey, I mean, it's good money. You're not getting hit. Hey, collect those checks. The last free agent, I know that Nick Kwiatkowski, he's going to be the starter, which I have no issue with. He actually played fairly well and actually helped in coverage. But the Jason Witten one bothers me on so many levels for the simple facts that he took meaningful snaps from a younger, better player in Foster Moreau. And the rationale was that he was supposed to be a locker room leader. You have a quarterback entering his eighth year. Shouldn't Derek Carr be that locker room leader?
Yes, he should be. And as we've mentioned on this podcast, I'm not sure that he is to a level that he needs to be. And the Jason Witten thing, I don't understand it at all. The Raiders went into the offseason. They had good depth in the tight end room. You had Darren Waller. You had Foster Moreau, who showed a lot of promise as a rookie, albeit coming off an injury. But he was healthy over the summer running around. We saw it. And the biggest thing the Raiders talked about last year was they didn't score in the red zone. That was the thing that they had to focus on, was we need to score in the red zone. So what does John Gruden do? He says, I'm going to sign Jason Witten and then play him in the red zone, and that's going to fix all these problems. It made it worse. Because Jason Witten, if he ran a 40-yard dash right now, I bet the over-under in Vegas would be at like 5-2, and I'd probably take the over. I don't think he's running a 5-2 40-yard dash at 40 years old. So he's basically slower than the linemen on the team. I don't know. I know Colton Miller would absolutely kill him in a 40-yard dash because Colton Miller can really run. He's a very athletic. But to go into the offseason and spend waste $4 million on Jason Witten and then refuse to – when you see that it's not working, refuse not to play him, and just keep running him out there over Foster Moreau or even Derek Carrier. And, I mean, the red zone issues, they had the answers there. They had Foster Moreau. They had Bryan Edwards. And for some reason, we just never saw them. So that was a big issue, is just Gruden being stubborn. And then you've seen it in these playoff games. I know Car fans aren't going to want to hear this, but having a quarterback who's mobile and can move around and extend plays makes it a lot easier to call plays, especially in the red zone. When you have a guy who's going to take a 3 or 5 step drop and the first or second option is not covered and the rush is there and he can't get away and he's either throwing it out of bounds or taking a sack, it's not helping at all. And that's no fault of Derek Carr. That's who he is. Derek Carr would have been a great quarterback in the league probably 10 or 15 years ago when the pocket passer was all the rage. But in today's game, these defenses are really good. You have to have someone that can get out and create. So and the red zone, I think, is going to continue to be an issue unless we start seeing some more fade routes, use some of those bigger bodies, use Waller more, use Edwards, maybe draft a 6'4", 6'5 guy that can just be a red zone guy for you that can win with some size. You're not going to score in the red zone in the NFL. One, if you can't run the ball, and two, if you're trying to throw the ball to Renfro, Ruggs, Aguilar, these smaller guys. The biggest guy of that group is Aguilar, and he's, what, 6 foot, 190 pounds? Like, that's an average cornerback size. Like, these guys aren't winning in the red zone with size. So now you got to scheme them up, but the space is so condensed that even the fast guys can't get open in the red zone. So they're going to have to figure out how to use those bigger bodies, the Edwards, the Moreaus, the Wallers, and maybe go draft a guy.
When we come back, I want to discuss play calling, scheming on offense and defense. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, we're going to kind of go, you know, back and forth on a few things. One of the things, a few questions. Is Josh Jacobs' first 2 years, is he a top five back?
No, he's not. Right now, he's not a top five back in the NFL. Is he a top 10 back? Yeah, he probably fits somewhere in that 7, 8, 9 range. But there's five running backs that are better than him in the NFL, clearly. And that doesn't even count Saquon Barkley, who's hurt. I would take Nick Chubb over him. I would take Christian McCaffrey over him, who was also hurt. Clearly Derrick Henry. Dalvin Cook in Minnesota for sure. So, I mean, there's probably a couple more, but he's good, but he lacks that home run ability that once he gets to the second or third level, he's not turning a 10 or 12 yard run into an 80 yard run. He's really good in short spaces and he's powerful. He can get extra yards, but he's not a home run threat. So there's guys that are going to separate themselves. He's going to have to stay healthy. That's another thing. As good as he is, and I love Josh Jacobs as a player, he's got to stay healthy for 16 games. He seems to always be nicked up one way or another, and he's playing through it, and he's a tough guy. The passing, he was actually a really good receiver out of the backfield. We saw a little bit in college. We saw a little bit more of that this year, but I'd like to see him get involved a little bit more. And part of it, too, is Gruden's play calling. The Raiders ran on first and 10, fourth or fifth most in the league, and they were running on first and goal, I think third or fourth in the league. So when he's getting his touches, the defense knows it. And he actually ran into loaded boxes. I went back and looked at this a couple of weeks ago. I think he ran into loaded boxes 20% of the plays last year, and this year it was like 26 or 27%. So he's running into 8 or 9 man boxes at a higher clip, so the defenses know what's coming. And the Raiders, you saw a lot of Carr audibling and getting out of some of those early in the season and taking some shots on early downs. And as the season went on, that just kind of went away. And it would kind of look like we're back to, okay, we're just going to run on first and 10 no matter what. And if it's second and 9, we'll figure it out. But the Raiders need to be a lot more creative on first down, I think.
Depending on who the Chargers hire, do you think that John Gruden will probably be the third best coach in the division?
We'll see. I think the Chargers are going to hire Brian Daboll. That's just a gut feel. The GM went to high school with him, so I think the offensive coordinator from Buffalo is coming over to be the coach of the Chargers, which to me it's kind of scary. I know, I believe it'll be his first time as a head coach, but what he's done with Josh Allen, and now he's going to get to work with Justin Herbert, and just kind of how creative they are in offense in Buffalo, and then you factor in the weapons that Herbert already has, and Buffalo can't run the ball. It's literally just Josh Allen and Diggs out there creating stuff. Now he's going to have Herbert, so I wouldn't say right now. I'd say if they hire Dable, Gruden's probably still the second-best coach in 2021, but in 2 or 3 years, is Dable going to be a better coach than Gruden? I'd say there's a high likelihood that that happens.
Speaking of Gruden, when you look at his passivity as a play caller, do you think over time that's going to improve, where he's going to become a little more aggressive? Or do you think, honestly, it sends a subliminal message that he's not totally sold on this offense as it's currently constructed?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think he likes how the offense is constructed because he's the one that's constructed it. His hands are all over this offense. Is he always going to be conservative when they're up, you know, they get a two-score lead, they're up 10, 11, 12 points, 15 points in a game? That's who he's been his whole career, so I don't think he's going to get away from that. Can he be more aggressive, like I mentioned, on first down? Can he be more aggressive in the red zone? Can he be more aggressive if he has a better defense? Because he's also been playing with a pretty bad hand on defense, although he's not a scapegoat. Like, there's a reason why this defense isn't good. He traded away Khalil Mack. The people that he's brought in, the free agents haven't worked out. The defense coordinator didn't work out. The draft picks haven't worked out. So his hands are all over this roster. But I think he's always going to lean more on the conservative side, and we'll see. The Raiders need to improve defensively if that's the way it's going to be, and they have to score touchdowns when they get in the red zone. If the Raiders scored 5 more touchdowns in the red zone this year, they'd probably make the playoffs. If the defense holds the other team instead of 30 points a game to 26 points a game, they'd probably make the playoffs. So there's a number of things that could determine getting to the playoffs, and that's great. And the fans that want to settle for, hey, we made the playoffs, but you really want to make the playoffs and lose the first round against better teams. So at some point, they're going to have to start playing real defense, and at some point, they're going to have to really score touchdowns when they get in the red zone. I'm not looking for a team to just make it, play a game, and go home and think we had a great season. The goal is to win a championship. So they need to compete with the elite teams in the league and not worry about being the 7th or 8th best team in a conference.
Have we seen pretty much the book written on Jonathan Abram?
I hope not. But we might have. So we'll see. I think all signs are pointing towards Gus Bradley or, you know, some sort of cover 3 system coming over. And hopefully, if it is Gus Bradley, he has experience with those kind of players, with Cam Chancellor, with Derwin James, and getting those guys out of deep coverage responsibility and getting them up, playing curls and flats and blitzing and being more involved closer to the line of scrimmage. This is where I think Abram needs to be. The problem is, if that happens, they have to have a free safety that has elite range that can cover up a lot of mistakes back there. But Abram, it's going to come down. It's all mental with him and understanding situations, understanding what his responsibilities are, and not trying to be the guy to intimidate other players and get random stupid penalties or want to make the play and leave his own responsibilities. So it's going to be up to, and this is what I mentioned earlier, the DB coach is probably the most important coach on the defensive side of the ball other than the coordinator. The Raiders have to hit a home run on the defensive coordinator and hit a home run on the DB's coach, because I don't think that Jim O'Neill can come back as a defensive backs coach and we see the same mistakes that we've seen the secondary make the 3 years he's been here. Can he stay on as a senior assistant role in some of the capacity? Yes, but I'd love to see the Raiders make a change at the defensive back coach and get a guy in there that's going to hold Abram responsible. And I'd even like to see Gruden do it. And when Abram blows a coverage or makes a stupid penalty, go put him on the bench for a series and see what happens, and be accountable for what he's doing, because they haven't done that. They've let him do whatever he wants on the field and they just leave him out there. So that part of that goes on coaching, part of it's technique, and part of it's on him. But we're always going to have a career with him where he's going to flash, he's going to make a big play here or there, but he's also going to make a couple of bonehead plays, and you're just going to have to live with it.
I have a name that is not really discussed, but he is regarded as one of the smartest defensive backs to play, and it seems as though he would be able to coach because he actually knows the position. He actually was pretty much the de facto coach on the field. Ed Reed as defensive backs coach.
I mean, I love it. I think he's coaching it. Is he at University of Miami right now? He's coaching somewhere, mm-hmm. doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be up. I'd love Gruden to let whoever the new defensive coordinator is make that hire and not just bring in big names and big personalities and hope they can do it. So hopefully Gruden uses his connections with the defensive coordinator. At this point, I have a feeling it's going to be Gus Bradley. It wouldn't be my first choice, but that's just the way that I feel. And if that happens, I hope he can figure out a way to get Chris Richard with him, because he's a really good defensive backs coach. He's a guy that can come in there and keep those guys accountable and just be involved. He was up for head coaching positions a couple of years ago. He interviewed, I think, for four or five of them. He was out of the league last year, kind of didn't get a head coaching job and kind of took some time to focus and learn the game more. So I would be okay with Gus Bradley with Richard coming as a package. It wouldn't be my first choice, but we've had much worse defensive coordinators in the history of the Raiders. But
Jason Tarver.
Jason Tarver, Ken Norton Jr., we can go down the list. But if that happens, the Raiders have to, A, improve the pass rush. They absolutely have to. They cannot go into next season with the guys they have and just add a rookie. They need a veteran. So the only way I would be okay with the Gus Bradley thing is if he figures out a way to get Melvin Ingram to come over from the Chargers, who's been in that system, who can be kind of a joker that can move around the line of scrimmage. He can rush the passer. I'd love to see him split some snaps with Crosby, give Crosby a rest. And then on third down, Ingram's been very good lining up inside against guards. He's got a really good spin move. He can move outside. You can move Farrell in. You can kind of move those guys around. So if you can get a pass, if you can go draft let's say they draft Nixon in the first round from Iowa, defensive tackle, and you add Melvin Ingram, and now on third down you can run out Crosby, Farrell, Ingram, Nixon, and move those guys around. Sounds a lot better to me. And then maybe Mo Hurst gets some snaps because they're going to stay in a 4-3. But you got to add at least two, if not three pieces, and then you have to get a free safety. You probably need two, because if the free safety goes down, you need a backup. You can't have Abram playing free safety in a cover three defense. So I'd love to see him go get a veteran free safety, and then if you draft another one in the first or second round, I'm fine with that too. But they absolutely have to get a three technique, and they have to get a free safety, and probably two if they hire Gus Bradley.
Justin Simmons or John Johnson, which one would you throw money at first?
I would take Simmons. I love Simmons. I think he's a perfect complement for Abram. He's got elite range. He's got ball skills. He's long. He can cover guys. He's been a free safety in this league at a Pro Bowl level. Johnson, to me, is more of a strong safety, kind of more, not quite as physical as Abram, but he fits more in that guy that wants to play the robber, the underneath stuff. I don't love him in deep coverage. So I think he doesn't pair very well with Abram. I would actually go Simmons, and then probably Marcus May with the Jets would be another guy that would fit pretty well. Marcus Williams with the Saints would be okay. But it absolutely has to be a veteran back there. I do not want to go into next season with Arnett, Mullen, Abram, and a rookie. And those are your four guys in the secondary, because there's no experience there. And in the system that they're going to run, hopefully. And the good news with Gus Bradley's system is it's going to be, if he gets hired, it's going to be very simple. They're going to run. It's not going to be very complicated defensively. Everyone's going to know their role. They should be able to play fast. But it's pretty easy to scheme against if you're playing primarily cover three with a single high. Because when you show single high, you can literally only play cover three or man, cover one. That's it. You can't really do anything else. So it should allow those guys to play faster. But they don't blitz. Gus Bradley does not blitz. He blitzed the least of any coordinator the last 3 years in the NFL. So we're not going to get an attacking defense. It's literally going to be down to the front four has to get home. So that's why they need at least two to three defensive linemen and at least two safeties if that's the route they go.
When I look at